You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 118 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
And should we get into this week's beer quickly? Because we have a couple of things to get to here.
We have some business to attend to. So yes, we should. So I picked out this beer in Safeway earlier. It was the most appealing thing in Safeway. And it's the Bainbridge Brewing Windfall Grapefruit IPA. I thought to myself when I picked this out, I have never even heard of Bainbridge Brewing. And you immediately identified when you walked in that we had not only had I heard of it, we had actually had this beer before.
I remember every beer I've ever drank.
Which is why you don't need to maintain the spreadsheet like I did, which verified.
I also definitely do not remember every... There are many beers that I do not remember.
Maybe some nights involving beer that you don't remember. Nonetheless, we will power through and try it again because it was not, of course, on the Pelton Cast that we had that. It was at Bumbershoot last year. I have no memory of this whatsoever. In the winter of 2015, our little island, that's Bainbridge Island, was struck by a furious windstorm, which knocked out our chiller while a tank of IPA was freshly fermenting. We couldn't release it as the original beer, but it tasted great. So we hit the beer with pink grapefruit and figured we'd save the batch by releasing it as a special one-off in our tap room. But some escaped. Then a lot of people started asking for it. Now it's our best-selling Northwest IPA. Life's weird.
Wow.
Do you remember
that windstorm?
This was in the winter of 2015? No, not specifically. Okay.
It wasn't a notable windstorm.
It wasn't the, what was that, the Columbus Day windstorm?
I mean, that was a long time ago.
The one against the 49ers?
Oh, that was Columbus Day?
No, that wasn't that. No,
that wasn't Columbus Day.
No, it was not. I don't know what I'm thinking of.
That was a fun windstorm, though. One of my favorite windstorms ever.
Hanukkah Eve windstorm? Obviously, Hanukkah is multiple nights, so I don't know what that would mean exactly either, but it was in December for sure, so it seems more plausible.
Your memory of windstorms is much worse than your memory of sporting events from the 90s.
Well, the only reason I remember it is because the Seahawks were playing against the 49ers on Thursday Night Football, and Frank Gore ran for approximately 8 million yards in that game.
Yeah, Frank Gore went off. It was a classic Frank Gore against the Seahawks game.
And the good news is that game, I'm pretty sure, that game was definitely more than 10 years old, so it qualifies for the Ben B. Bingo Square.
All right, should we get to some of the announcements that we have?
Well, first, let's try this beer.
All right. Oh, I get it. It's called Windfall Grapefruit IPA.
That does make sense now. It's not that grapefruity, I would say, all things considered.
I got to say, this isn't great.
Frank Gore in that game, 29 carries for 144 yards.
Okay.
To the business. Well, first
we're
off,
toasting to the business.
No, I was just
okay. Oh, gesturing. You were.
Yeah, I was gesturing
to the business.
Beer. You interpreted it.
Okay.
As a toast. That was not how I was intended. We start with a reminder as you listen to this podcast
and an announcement.
Oh yes, and an announcement as you listen to this podcast. Our live show on Wednesday, August 29th, no more than 3 weeks away.
Wow.
And tickets are going fast.
There are less than 10 tickets left. If you're interested in coming, get your tickets now because they're going quickly.
And you're going to want to make sure you have your tickets to listen to our third Pelton brother to help us decide our search for Seattle's best burrito/tacos. We mentioned it on the podcast we did with him earlier, but now we have locked it in and confirmed it, so we're comfortable announcing it again. Jake One will be joining us.
You knew him. You loved him on the first ever Talkin' Taco Time. He'll be back talking tacos because he will be the third Pelton brother to help us choose Seattle's best burrito/taco.
And we'll have a little bit more in terms of detail about that bracket later in this very episode.
Ooh, a teaser.
Yes.
Again, if you're on the fence about the live show, some of the things you can expect. Jake One, obviously. Talkin' Taco Time Live. The debut of Trader Bros Live. A Seahawks season preview with Tasteful Propanity, a Beast Pod production. Plus, surprises. Yeah. Are we toasting to something?
A toast to their 50th episode. Congrats to our buddies at Tasteful Profanity. A fun episode that they had with Ben Baldwin, who described odd quirks that lead to bingo cards.
Odd quirks?
I don't feel like there's anything odd or quirky about us.
Catchphrases.
Yes. Nothing like that at all. Anyways, our other piece of business to attend to this week. The return of the PeltonCast Fantasy Football League and or leagues, depending on how many people sign up this year. So if you want to be part of this, which we did last year for the first time, you did not win notably, despite your incredible amount of bragging that you were going to win. The listener can't tell that Tristan is giving me the stink eye over this.
It was a long fantasy football season.
It sure was. Much longer for you than some of the rest of us.
Didn't do that good, did you?
I feel like I finished quite well and then maybe had a disappointing playoffs. I can't remember exactly what happened. It's been a long time.
That sounds like
now.
You.
It does sound like me, doesn't it? If you would like to be part of the league this year, hit us up on Twitter at PeltonCast or email us at PeltonCast@gmail.com and we'll reserve a spot for you.
And anybody who participated last year, will they be grandfathered in? Or everybody who wants to participate at all will find?
I'm sure we'll figure out a way for everyone, but yeah, I assume that we can also email the people who were in last year via the ESPN commissioner setup, and we'll do that tomorrow as well now that we've announced that we're doing that again this year.
Are we still going to do the whole PPR thing? I'm not sold on it.
I don't know. The other thing we got to figure out depends on how many people actually come back, but we did talk about having promotion and relegation.
Oh, God, I'm going to be relegated.
You are in line to be relegated, I'm pretty sure. Like, you know, have fun in the lesser league. We've put you in the right level of competition for your skills.
It would be kind of fun to have like a Champions League, though.
The main thing I was conceiving it of.
I'm like Juventus in Serie B.
We also get a points deduction. We had, I think, one person who ceased managing their team pretty early in the season, if I recall correctly, in our league. But the idea is if you have this promotion and relegation, it gives you incentive to keep playing even if you're out of the championship picture.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, ideally, we would have like three tiers.
I mean, we'll see. Let's make sure again that we get enough for two.
The problem is that with this, I mean, we're constantly talking about adding new people every year or losing people. We kind of need to have it locked in with the amount of people to do promotion and relegation. But like, if you get into the upper tier league, I feel like you'd be back for the next year.
You would think. But yeah, I think it was a fun time. I think people enjoyed it last year. And we'll have to figure out what we're going to get the winners this year.
I look forward to debating complicated rules with you.
Do you look forward to that?
No, not at all.
All right, anything else on announcements? Okay, so
that sigh was for my fantasy football season last year. We will be back.
That's a guarantee. So is a way of getting us into our discussion of this week, the final entrant in our search for Seattle's Best Tacos /Burrito, we have to first make a stop and recap last week's exciting hydroplane action on Lake Washington to explain why we ate so late at Asadero Prime and Kent. So the Seafair final was scheduled for 5:30 on Sunday, which is the latest scheduled hydroplane race I can ever remember seeing. I guess technically it wasn't later than the heats on Saturday, which were won at, I believe, one of them was run after 6, I'm pretty sure. It was a very long day on the shores of Lake Washington with not a lot going on between the Blue Angels and those two heats several hours later. Anyways, so Sunday, it was scheduled for 5:30, got pushed back, I think, to 5:45 because of delays in the schedule related to the air show.
It really, hydroplane racing is for the person who said, what if they made the entire game out of halftime?
You know, but the nice thing is, you're still sitting on a lake, worst case scenario.
I guess that's true.
In nice weather. Unfortunately, after some clouds on Thursday and Friday that forced the Blue Angels to perform their low show, gorgeous days, both Saturday and Sunday, not too hot. It was really ideal conditions, I would say. Okay, so the final is finally set at 5:45. We're going to get our thrilling showdown between the U1 Miss Homestreet.
Ones of you are ready for this race.
Oh, there were literally dozens of us. U1 Miss Homestreet, driven by Jimmy Shane. The U9 Les Schwab Tires, driven by Andrew Tate. The two top contenders that we talked about all week.
So why on the broadcast were they not calling it Les Schwab?
What did they call it?
The Jones Racing or whatever.
I mean, that's the name of the team. But Les Schwab, I think, was still the sponsor this week, as far as I know.
I mean, Les Schwab was on the boat. I'd be pretty furious personally if I was Les Schwab.
Yeah. You're a strongly worded call about that.
So Luca also thinks that the Pelton cast is definitely going to sponsor a hydroplane soon.
You know, it's going to be a ways. I won't do want to mock up what it would look like if we sponsored a Pelton cast hydroplane.
We need to mock up this is my favorite hydroplane talk. You mock up a close race, so it'd be unrealistic. but between two hydroplanes, a Pelton cast hydroplane and a Talkin' Taco Time hydroplane.
So is the Trader Bros hydroplane just not involved in this exciting finish?
It's the trailer boat.
Oh no. Okay.
Trailer Bros.
Oh, wow. Well done. So it's basically set up in this final heat that the home street is going to be in lane 3, the Les Schwab in lane 4, with a couple of slower boats, the Oberto and the J&D Plumbing inside of them. So we're coming to turn 2 at the end of the first lap, and predictably the home street and the Les Schwab have pulled away from the rest of the pack and are neck and neck. It looks like it's going to be as thrilling a hydroplane race as is humanly possible, at least in 2018. But lo and behold, disaster strikes, because with these three boats running ahead of them, the Oberto in lane 1 gets squeezed and goes over the rooster tail of the J&D Plumbing in the lane outside of them, causing it to rise probably about 25 feet in the air. It never completely flipped over in like the traditional hydroplane blowover flip, but got kind of back on its tail a little bit and then went sideways and then landed back in the water relatively gently for a flip. There was very little apparent damage on the boat, but obviously this necessitates stopping the race so that they can assure that the driver is okay, tow the boat back in, all of these sort of things. And they refused for a long period. So fortunately, it quickly became clear that the driver, Cal Phipps, or in this case, Cal Flips, was... Been saving that.
So bad.
Been saving that. And he was fine.
You would have tweeted that had anybody cared.
Exactly. I have so many hydroplane tweets that I just have no outlet for whatsoever. It's a
you
real
need a
shame.
Third even Kevin Pelton hydroplane Twitter.
Even you don't like my hydroplane tweets. Even you're not.
I'm going to start being an angry Lakers fan if you start having these hydroplane tweets.
So they don't announce a time for when they're going to rerun the final. And then they announce a time. And then the time comes when they should start the countdown to the final. And then the countdown just doesn't happen. And people are getting very angry in the beer garden where our mom and I were watching the final heat after spending the rest of the day elsewhere, because that was kind of closer to where I was parked and it gave us a head start on walking home. And finally, around 7 o'clock, they run the final, just when they're starting to like run out of sunlight, you know, potentially run the risk of not even being able to run the final if something goes wrong in this heat. And in this case, the rerun of it, the strategy here was the home street was basically trying to keep the Les Schwab to the outside of it the entire time before the race as boats are selecting their lanes. And I was describing this as textbook strategy for how to pick your lane.
Who were you describing this to?
Mom.
Jan. Okay.
She expressed no opinion about this. But lo and behold, so the home street gets a solid start, pulls away off like late in lap 1, and it's a parade for the next 4 laps. No competition whatsoever from the Les Schwab in this case. But sometime when I think about lap 2, we get word that there's a possible penalty on the home street. And lo and behold, they were in fact penalized for not going more than 80 miles per hour. You're allowed to do that once, and then if you do that a second time before the start, you get penalized a lap, which is probably too complex to explain why this happens, but it creates a lot of judgment calls.
It hasn't stopped you so far.
So it's an exact inverse of the previous year's race, where the Les Schwab won on the water, but then was called for a penalty for striking a buoy before the start of the race, and therefore that handed the win to the home street. In this case, the exact opposite outcome. The second time in 3 years that Andrew Tate has won at Seafair, the 3 years that he's raced it, which is kind of ironic given that his dad, Mark Tate, who was a famed hydroplane racer in the 90s and then early 2000s, famously never won Seafair despite being an extremely successful driver over the course of his career. But now his son owns the Seafair trophy, basically.
Are we done talking hydroplanes?
I think we are. So anyways.
This is the week of the first Seahawks game of the year, and you talk for like 15 minutes about hydroplanes.
The game hasn't been played yet. We don't need to do an extensive preview of a preseason game.
This is where you get candidly angry.
Yes. So anyways, we didn't make it to your house until after 8. By the time we actually get to Asadero Prime in Kent, I think it's pushing 9 by that point. Mm-hmm. So it's the second consecutive week that we've reviewed a location just about as it's closing on a Sunday night. It's just the ideal time to really try something. But fortunately, Asadero Prime was not out of several things, unlike Taco Time, the other Taco Time in Yakima.
It's amazing.
So this has been a place we've been waiting to go the entire time. I don't know why it took us so long, possibly just because of the fact that, you know, there's a relatively long wait. There's only a couple of locations. It's not, you know, it's not quite as convenient perhaps to get to as some of the other locations, I guess. But this we knew all along was going to be a top contender, even though it's a very different type of place than Tacos, Chuki's, or any of the other places really that we've tried over the course of this search.
Yeah, it's almost like the search for Seattle's best burrito and taco. They don't really have burritos there, right?
They don't.
It's more of a steakhouse, and that's really what they're kind of trying to pivot toward and build themselves as. So it's a little bit outside of the locations that we've been to so far. However, it still feels like culturally in under the same umbrella as somewhere like Tacos Chuki's.
So a little bit of history. Asadero began its life actually as a food truck in Kent in 2014.
Really? Yeah. Food truck.
So then they moved to a couple of times, I think, before settling. The location that we had previously been to was kind of basically in Midway, near where the new Dick's is going to be, which is technically in Kent, but also very close to Des Moines.
It's just an awful location.
It was not a very friendly location. It was a small place. It was hard to get to. There was nothing around it.
Like an abandoned Chubby and Tubby or something.
It was in like a strip mall. So they subsequently then, because of the success of that location, which did inspire these long lines despite its terrible location, expanded to Ballard in 2016 with a place that I have not been. Have you been to the Ballard location?
Nope.
And then this
which
spring,
like Ballard is the most polar opposite you could possibly be from this location.
It is quite fascinating. So then in this spring, they moved to a different location in Kent near downtown, near the arena there, the Showair Center, and it's a bigger location. It's much nicer. It's got more of the steakhouse feel and less of the like place you're going for homemade tacos feel.
Yeah, you can go there and then go watch In Vogue.
Whichever 90s R&B artists happen to be playing at the
Showair
Center.
It could be Drew Hill, SWV.
There's a lot of options.
I honestly didn't know that it had moved locations until we were on our way there. And I was a little bit surprised about sort of the pivot that they'd had, kind of moving more toward a steakhouse. It's a little bit sleeker before.
Yeah, so it was originally known, by the way, as Asadero Sinaloa, after the region in Mexico, the state in Mexico, where this food is derived from. Now they are calling it Asadero Prime.
And it's like Asadero Prime by Chef David Orozco. And it's like that name didn't mean anything 4 years ago.
No, absolutely not. I mean, this was his first restaurant of any kind.
But now it's like it's his steakhouse. So it's an interesting change, but the menu remains largely the same.
It does. So a little bit more in terms of background. Here's what it says on the website. Asadero is no ordinary steakhouse. We cook using traditional Sinaloan methods, using high heat and mesquite wood, which imparts a unique flavor to our meats. Our kitchens feature Spanish-made Jasper? Charcoal ovens, which combine grilling and oven cooking methods in a single unit. They are designed to cook faster, more efficiently, and to produce a consistently higher quality product. In Mexico, Asaderos de Parrilladas, mixed grill in English, and steaks. It's the Mexican version of a steakhouse with homemade flour tortillas, fire roasted and stone ground salsas with the star bean Sonoran beef. Famous is the best in Mexico.
So good.
Yeah. Okay, so what did we get here? We got the New York tacos.
Yes.
We also got the Wagyu platter.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the star of the show, the Wagyu platter.
It's the go-to item for any person who's going to this location. So you get,
it better be multiple people.
Well, one person probably couldn't eat it, but two could comfortably do it, I think.
Yes, I think so.
It's 16 ounces of Wagyu beef, kind of prepared. It's thinly sliced in that Mexican style. There's a sausage.
Yes.
And then there's just kind of like a slice of cactus and then a jalapeno pepper.
Yes. And then also comes with tortillas and salsa.
Oh.
So that you can prepare your own tacos. And I got to say, my number one takeaway from this.
Yes.
The tacos I had, slicing up the Wagyu from the platter, much better than the New York steak tacos.
Really?
Yeah, you don't agree with that?
I don't fully agree with that.
Okay.
I think the meat, the New York tacos, I thought the meat was a little bit better. It was like a little bit thicker, a little bit juicier.
Yeah, I agree with that. But there also wasn't nearly as much of it as you were able to do.
Well, I put all the things in it. It comes with a little cup of beans and then a little side of kind of like a mild salsa, but like fire roasted it's a very flavorful salsa.
It was terrific.
It's smoky. It's excellent.
No, the one mistake we made is I saw that there was a salsa bar towards the back of the restaurant. I actually thought it being late on a Sunday night that they had actually cleared that out already. And it turned out they hadn't, and our mom was the only one who actually ended up getting any salsa out of that.
I had more than enough salsa right there.
I could have used more salsa, because we ran out. I was okay with the type of salsa, but I could have used more.
Those handmade tortillas, unbelievable.
Yeah, those are, pretty next level.
I mean, like, it really is tough to compare it to Tacos Chuki's, because they're doing kind of different things. But the combination of the really, flavorful meat plus the really good tortillas together, where it's almost like a moist tortilla, that's what makes me think like these are on the same continuum here, and that's why I feel like Asadero Prime should be able to compete in this competition. It also could compete in a best steakhouse competition too, though.
That's true. That's probably not something we're ever going to do, but it would potentially be the case.
The amazing thing for me though is that Wagyu platter that you're talking about, it's like $23.
Yes.
I mean, this is an incredible price. Maybe it's more expensive at the location in Ballard, but that is an incredible price for the quality and quantity of meat that you're getting.
I think another case for that over the tacos, where you're getting four of those tacos for like $16.
Still at $4 per taco just for that meat and the handmade tortillas, I would pay it 100 times out of 100.
I agree, but I would maybe rather go... I don't know. I mean, two of the platters for three of us would have been excessive, especially because
two platters.
Mom wasn't eating very much.
I like the tacos.
You like them more than I do.
You're underrating the tacos right now.
You're underrating the ability to create tacos on your own using the way.
Tacos with your own hands.
Yeah. Because the tacos were the actual tacos you're ordering on the menu. Very plain as they come. They also come with the side of beans and the salsa, but you're just getting the tortilla and meat. That's all you're getting.
That's what I'm looking for. I mean,
not at all what Tacos Chuki's serves.
Tacos Chuki's does. I mean, they're a different kind of taco, but the meat is the star there.
100%.
The meat and the tortillas are the stars, and you need a star of the show.
I suppose so. You need a star to win the Seattle's Best Burrito Indoor Taco Championship. All right, what is your rating for Asadero Prime?
I'm giving it a 95.
95? You realize that's the same rating that you gave Tacos Chuki's.
Is it really?
It is.
Wow. It is stiff competition.
All right, I gave it a 93. I was not quite as high.
Maybe I'll change it to I want to change Tacos Chuki's to a 97 and then give them a 95, but I'm willing to give them a 94 for now.
I mean, it doesn't really matter either way. The ratings
are... Should they meet again in some sort of bracket style?
Perhaps even in a live podcast. I mean, that seems conceivable.
This is going to be very stiff competition.
Okay, so it's that time. As we mentioned, Asadero Prime is going to be the last location, the last contender. Apologies to Gorditas, which we never got to.
We missed a lot of locations.
We missed Taco El Rey, which were not far from where you live. That was disappointing. A number of the listener suggestions, I'm afraid we didn't get to, but we just kind of ran out of time at some point.
You know what? I'm just going to say it right now. We're going to continue eating tacos after this summer.
I did have that thought. Although, you know what? I realized...
might not continue rating them on the podcast. We're just going to continue eating tacos.
I was watching Ugly Delicious and looking up this place in Caesars that they talked about and saw that they had soup dumplings. And I was like, man, I haven't had a single soup dumpling since the end of that bracket.
Maybe we'll never have a taco again.
Yeah. It's,
I haven't had a burger in a full year.
We're not going to Taco Time anymore. Okay. So it's time to announce our bracket. So Tacos Chuki's is the reigning belt holder, will advance automatically to the final on August 29th at Barboza. We never said the location earlier when we got the live show.
Oh, yeah, Barboza. August 29th.
And get your tickets.
And the date. We didn't say the date either.
I did say the date.
Okay, we just said Jake won.
Get your tickets on the PeltonCast website. So the other four burritos that will be competing for that spot opposite Tacos Chuki's in the final.
This is almost kind of like an overcorrection for what happened last summer to Loretta's, where Loretta's got knocked out in one of the earlier stages, was unable to make it to the final.
But it wasn't as clear that Loretta's was the belt holder at that point. Apparently it was especially unclear to you and to the famous cousin Katie, as much as you like to blame it on her.
It was all Katie's fault.
It was very clear to me. All right, so Asadero Prime will be the one seed here. They will go compete again next week against the number four seed, Fogon Cochina Mexicana, in Capitol Hill. And then the other matchup, which will follow the week of the 20th, I guess, will be the number two seed, Tucantines, versus the number three seed, El Camion.
There we go.
So... these are all very similarly rated, with the exception of Asadero Prime kind of stood above the rest of them. The other ones here were all within a point of each other.
Really?
Yeah, in terms of the average of our two scores.
I am so ready to eat more tacos.
Same.
By the way, if you're talking about me and the famous cousin Katie being wrong about that, if you saw the review from Marcus Lario on his Instagram of the other Taco Time, you were wrong on that one.
Look, I'd like to believe that I can see the good in almost any restaurant. Almost anything except the Costco hamburger.
It was really the only time that you were ever angry about anything.
I just felt the need to warn other people. I did. So
is
Marcus,
it gone? Is it?
I think so. I
have you killed the Costco hamburger.
No, the Costco hamburger killed the Costco hamburger. I haven't been to the 4th Avenue Costco in a while.
Why did Costco not make a burrito this summer for us?
It's really a strange choice. Marcus, before he went...
They'll be able to cover it next year on Seattle Times' burrito bracket next summer.
Sent us a message saying he was about to go, and I did respond to him. It's not too late to change your mind.
Oh, my God. Anyway, the champion, again, will be awarded August 29th at the Barboza.
And you'll have the chance to vote in our fan vote, which you'll recall last year crowned Dick's Seattle's Best Burger.
I'm curious to see what happens. It's stiff competition here.
Certain newspapers copied our format and also ended up with Dick's as their champion. Should we talk about sports? Yeah. Besides hydroplane racing, of course, which we've already gotten into. Let's start on the arena front, where the August 10th meeting of the Seattle City Council's Select Committee on Civic Arenas has been canceled, leaving their next meeting on September 14th, which will be the possible vote on final transaction documents. We're still awaiting word on what's going to happen with the final environmental impact study regarding the Key Arena rebuild, which I think will be kind of telling in terms of what happens with that vote and then also the timeline for the rebuild and renovation. Speaking of Key Arena, the scheduled final event there this fall, the Warriors-Kings NBA preseason game we've talked about, scheduled for Friday, October 5th. Tickets went on sale at 10 a.m. Tuesday by 2 p.m. Tuesday 4 hours later, they were down to a handful of scattered singles in the lower bowl and nothing in the entire upper bowl. So
the full arena was on sale.
Yes.
Wow.
And it went fast. I mean, I heard something. The word I had heard at one point is that it sold out within 11 minutes. That turned out not to be true. I think it was over an hour, and there were some tickets available. But it is still by the afternoon. You know, if you wanted to get two tickets together, that was not going to be possible.
Well, who would have imagined that there'd be interest in professional basketball in the city of Seattle?
I don't know, but I hope the NBA is taking note of this development and you know, the hunger that exists here in Seattle for professional basketball.
Spoiler alert, they're not.
I don't know. I tagged Adam Silver as his
did you really?
Secret account on my tweet today. So
wait, there's a secret Adam Silver account? Is this a joke?
No.
There's like Brian Colangelo style Adam Silver account?
No, he doesn't actually tweet from it. It has zero tweets, but he didn't disclose the account that he was using strictly to follow people. And then a sleuth on somewhere on the internet tracked that down and located his account based on, like, and his brother had tweeted about the account, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I made sure to tag him.
You tag that one? That's how you do it. Thing. That's how you communicate with Adam Silver.
Well, because he's not following me, so that's the only way I can do it.
If you get a follow tomorrow from Adam Silver, you'll know that he listens to the Pelton Cast. That'll be like the bat signal that basketball's coming back to Seattle.
Yes. If that happens, Gary, book it. NBA team back. Well, anything else on this?
No, it's exciting. I mean, I feel like a toast isn't in order.
Sure.
To NBA basketball happening in Seattle for the first time since
2008. Unless you're going to count the Blazers scrimmage tier once.
Oh, did they?
They did. At Garfield. That was the closest we've come since then.
Well, and also the various crossover events.
That's true.
And
shouts to the crossover.
But the first NBA basketball game happening in 10 years, and the demand being just as high as it was 10 years ago.
Higher than it was 10 years ago. We didn't technically sell out the final Sonics game at Key Arena.
It's all my fault.
Not that I blame anyone for that, but that technically did not. All right, speaking of sports teams that we do have in Seattle, it's time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you. As much as I hate to do this, I think you need it this week, of all times. And I'm here to say that we should just trust in you about what's going to happen in the future. You told us for so long that the Husky basketball team was not as good as they were playing, and we called you a hater. A lot. And we reveled in it. You told us that the Mariners' run differential was unsustainable, and we called you a hater again. We said that the Mariners were playing so well that you were already starting to hate on them. But stats, much like time, always catch up with you. And for this one take, I am willing to say that we should trust in you. Because stats have caught up with the Mariners, and they're now sitting 2 games behind the Oakland A's in the wild card race at a minus 25 run differential.
Wait, have you updated that for tonight?
I think that is correct.
Okay.
A negative 25 run differential, which should put them somewhere at like 5 games under 500. But this team kept winning close games. We said it was destiny. But they were winning games at the beginning of the season, and they don't choose the playoff teams at the beginning of the season.
That is true.
The playoffs don't start in June. They start in October. And for this one time, you told us the Lakers aren't going to the playoffs. You also said the Mariners weren't going to the playoffs. And for now, it looks like you're right.
I mean, I probably didn't say either of those two things because I would have approached it probabilistically.
In stone.
The Mariners have basically the identical run differential of the Minnesota Twins, who are minus 26. They are 53-59, 6 games below 500. That's about where the Mariners should be.
Oh, man.
I mean, kind of the amazing thing is actually that they're still in the hunt behind only 2 games back of the A's, who have a plus 57 run differential. But the two teams seem to be trending in opposite directions, I think it would be fair to say, at this point of the season.
There was a tweet from last week about how the A's won a close game and the Mariners lost a close game, and somebody was like, if that ain't karma, I don't know what is. It's like, the Mariners are bad. You realize this. There's no karma at play here. They're just a bad team playing bad baseball.
So they lost five consecutive games last week, including their first three of the series, the road series at Safeco Field against the Toronto Blue Jays, and the great Mitty. Canadian fans who make the trek down I-5 to support the Blue Jays here in Seattle before rallying with back-to-back wins. And then on Tuesday...
until Felix Hernandez hit the mound.
He did. And the Rangers hit Felix to the tune of 11 runs, 7 earned, and 6 innings. It's the second time in his last three starts that Felix has allowed at least, or has allowed precisely 7 earned runs. His 5.73 ERA is now the third worst among all pitchers who have thrown at least 100 innings this season.
When is he going to hit the DL with a dead arm, right? Like, they're just going to keep throwing him out there because he's Felix Hernandez?
Man, I don't know. It's rough. But do you want a reason for hope?
Not really.
Okay.
Sure.
No.
For the sake of what you were going to say, I do. We'll just get the, Robinson, I'm kind of reveling in this, though.
Robinson Cano headed back. He played for the Rainiers on Monday and Tuesday, going 2-for-7, then is expected to play for the Everett Aqua Sox this weekend. Before joining the Mariners next week, he will be eligible to return from his PED suspension next Tuesday.
He's going from AAA to single A?
Well, just because they want him to strictly play in home games. The Rainiers are going out of the road.
Ah.
They don't want him to travel.
Okay.
So, hopefully they'll help his confidence. Beat up on those single A pitchers. They don't know what's coming. So we'll see if that changes the Mariners' fortunes. But do you know whose fortunes have changed? Do you know who's winning close games?
Who's that?
You know who's got good karma? It's the Seattle Sounders. Because when the Mariners are down, the Sounders are up.
And the Sonics are even the entire time.
Yeah, that's probably true. Is I actually showed statistically in graphing their playoff odds, the Mariners from FanGraphs, the Sounders from 538 Soccer Power Index over the course of the season, in terms of the weekly updates that 538 does, which is then also I picked those dates from FanGraphs, which does every day, there is a negative 0.95 correlation between the two teams' playoff odds.
Wow.
It's like almost perfectly negatively correlated.
Wow.
It's incredible. So while the Mariners are falling apart, the Sounders are surging, and the stats said that they were eventually going to turn it around, but didn't really expect it to happen this fast, where the Sounders have now won five matches in a row after a thrilling comeback on Saturday night in Minnesota, a game that they trailed 1-0 basically the entire game after giving up a relatively early goal in the first half. So come the 88th minute, they're still trying to chase that equalizing goal. And there's a handball in the box, no call. The play continues down the other end. Stephen Fry, one-on-one with a Minnesota forward, stops him cold. And that alone allows the referee to go to VAR and review the call and determined that there was, in fact, a handball.
I was going to say they managed to have a non-called handball and score two goals?
No.
Okay, that would have been very impressive.
That would have been a lot. They award the Sounders a penalty kick. Nico Ladero calmly steps up and converts it. And so at this point, I was driving home from the super late races on Saturday night at Seafair and heading to your home. And I got out of the car right after Ladero's penalty kick. I'm like, hey, solid. Point on the road. You know, definitely a credible result. I look up open up the ESPN app shortly after that, and I'm like, wait, what? Sounders 2, Minnesota 1? Because it turns out in the 7th minute of stoppage time, Will Bruin has scored to give the Sounders the full 3 points on the road, push them past Minnesota in the standings all the way up to 9th in the Western Conference, or up 8th? I don't know, one of those two. Up in the Western Conference standards.
Numbers don't lie.
I didn't look up that part of it.
But the thrill coming through. Who said that the Sounders need attacking help in the 97th minute for the win?
Yeah. And Bruin has been like a super sub lately. This new role for him with Raul Ruiz Diaz establishing himself as the starter. Sometimes they play together. Sometimes he's playing as the lone striker, but bringing him in late in games to like look for goals, that's been a very successful thing for the Sounders. And they continue to surge. They are, in fact, in 8th place and actually in 7th, just outside the playoff race in terms of points per match. They're 1 point behind Vancouver, but have
a
match
in
hand.
How many teams make the
playoffs? Six. They're 5 points back of Real Salt Lake, 4-6. But 538 now, as you mentioned, those playoff odds opposite. 538 now has them more likely to make the playoffs than not.
Wow.
After their playoff odds were down to 16%, I think 3 weeks ago.
16%?
Yeah.
I mean, it is unbelievable what this is. We don't know what's going to happen for the rest of the season. This may all hit the wall.
It might.
They may not pull this off and make the playoffs. But so far, what this team has achieved in the second half under Brian Schmetzer, we need to get to the point where we say they're bad for real and believe it. And that's when the team gets good.
And, I mean, that's precisely what we did on the 4th of July pod. And that was when they have not lost a match since then. They're undefeated in 7 matches and have won the last 5 of those.
We need to write the Schmetz eulogy. And then the team puts it together.
We're going to have to do that before the start of the season next year. I think that's the only way to do it. In less exciting news, the Sounders will not be adding Peruvian midfielder Paulo Hurtado, whose transfer we reported the last couple weeks was close. Instead, in a stunning change, he ended up agreeing to a transfer to Turkish club Konyaspor. The MLS transfer window closes on Wednesday, so we'll see if the Sounders can complete any business before then to add to the roster. Although the way things are going, maybe it's not as urgent to add anything, you know, at this point as it was a few weeks ago. They may potentially could use some depth at center back, where Kim Keehee left in the first half of Saturday's game with an ankle injury. No word on his status going forward. It's probably not too serious, but that does leave the Sounders pretty thin behind Roman Torres and Chad Marshall.
All right.
So this weekend, the Sounders again facing a team ahead of them in the Western Conference standings. It is West leading FC Dallas, which comes in with 42 points, but just ninth in the 538 Soccer Power Index, 2 spots ahead of the Sounders. Their goal differential, they have outperformed it. They are +8 on the course of the season. And they are coming off a tremendously disappointing loss at home to last place San Jose last weekend. So
the Sounders are going to make regression to the mean work for them.
They got a chance to. They certainly have a chance to. Elsewhere on the soccer front, the Seattle Reign returned from their brief midseason break for the U.S. Women's National Team with a 2-0 win at home on Sunday over the lowly Washington Spirit. They are now 3 points up on the Orlando Pride for second place in the NWSL with a match in hand on the Pride, and they travel to face Utah this Saturday.
And what is Utah's nickname?
Didn't write that down.
The Arches?
It's not the Arches. It decidedly is not that. Do I need to look this up?
Yeah, you need to look this up.
Okay.
And can I mention at this point how incredibly unlikely it was around the year 1996 that the Utah Jazz would be tweeting, I want to find the exact verbiage of this, and what we would have thought about this had we known that this was going to happen. First off, we didn't know what tweeting was. But if we would have known...
would have had so many questions back in 1996.
If we would have known in 1996 when the Sonics were playing the Jazz in the Western Conference Finals, probably our most hated team of any basketball team. Would you agree with this?
You know, there's probably a better way for you to find it than just scrolling back through all of the Jazz's tweets.
I'm there.
Okay.
That at some point in the year 2018, the Utah Jazz's official Twitter account would have tweeted, "Everyone have a great weekend, especially Kevin Pelton."
They were excited about the RPM projections.
The chances of that being a sincere tweet in 1996 and not somebody mocking you, also the idea of a professional sports franchise specifically calling you out, is very unlikely.
Yeah.
But this is the team of Greg Ostertag, of Adam Keith, of Brian or Byron Russell. That team saying, "Everybody have a great weekend, especially Kevin Pelton." Sean Kemp is rolling in his grave.
I'm most popular in Utah. I really probably should just move there, honestly. Much more popular than
we should.
Here.
That's why you should know the name of this Utah.
Which is the Utah Royals.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Which is interesting because they moved from Kansas City, where they would have been the Kansas City Royals.
They did move from Kansas City?
Yeah.
And they were...
No, they weren't the Royals there. They just added that name when they moved.
Wow.
There you go.
Trying to cash in on the Lord's success.
Also, the amazing thing, by the way, I just have been observing this when I've been looking at the NWSL standings. New Jersey has 4 points from 17 matches.
Huh.
4 points.
Wow.
Either four draws or one win and one draw out of 17 matches. That is so bad. They might... I guess I should look this up to see what the actual result of it is here. Yeah, they have not won a single match all season in 17 tries. Sky Blue FC. So, there you go. Better luck. Better luck going forward, Sky Blue FC. Speaking of teams that have won a lot of games and have not lost any games since the All-Star break, it's the Seattle Storm, who have come back with a 4-0 week, and a toast is in order to the Storm for becoming the WNBA's first team to clinch a playoff berth with their win last Friday over the Minnesota Lynx. Before that, they got a big road win at Phoenix. The struggling Mercury have now lost 5 in a row. And then kicked off their four-game road trip by sweeping a back-to-back, first winning at New York, pulling away late in the game that started at 8 a.m. on Monday morning Pacific time, 11 a.m. in the Eastern time in New York, and then beat Indiana on Tuesday night, and they have now moved within one win of clinching a top two seed and a bye all the way to the WNBA semifinals, as we discussed last week with the WNBA playoff format. And their magic number is now 2 to clinch the top seed and home court advantage throughout the playoffs. The 23 wins for the Storm, now the second most in franchise history behind only the 28 they had in 2010 when they brought home the second championship in Storm history.
All right.
So the Storm will play another matinee on the in Eastern time on Thursday, starting at 8:30 a.m. Pacific against the Washington Mystics.
Oh, my God.
You caught that I've said the earlier one, they started at 8 a.m. Pacific.
Oh, my God.
And that was the first game of the road trip.
This is troubling.
Then they wrap up the road schedule playing the Lynx again on Sunday before having the rest of the week off to prepare for their final two games at home. Hopefully having clinched the number one seed by that point.
I have a hard time having a business call at 8:30 a.m. I can't even imagine playing basketball.
It felt early for me to watch the game. I was just watching. I didn't have to do anything physical at all. It felt very early. You attended your second consecutive Storm game last Friday. Any thoughts on that experience?
It was a nice comeback that they had. They were down about 10 when we walked in, but by the time we got to our seats, when you're trying to get to seats with three children, it takes a long time.
Only three of your 10 to 15?
By the time we got to our seats, the Storm were leading.
Yeah, and then so pulled away.
I'm taking full credit for it.
Yeah, I think that's completely appropriate for you to do, and that's why you have to continue attending Storm games, including into the playoffs.
We'll see.
All right, UW football kicked off their fall practice last week, and some disappointing news to kick off fall camp is five-star linebacker recruit L.A. Cahill was not part of practice, and Chris Peterson later confirmed he's been granted his release from his national letter of intent. Adam Jude of the Seattle Times reported that his aunt and uncle died suddenly in June, and his parents are also in the process of divorcing. He reported in that piece further that Cahill had lost 20 pounds while he was in Seattle, and that, you know, family members were sort of concerned that he didn't seem like himself in the midst of all of this. So, you know, as much talk as there has been about him reopening his recruiting and where he's going to go next, at this point, it seems like the focus is, you know, more on getting him in the right place than anything regarding football.
I mean, that might be the focus for you, but welcome to college football fans. That is not the focus for literally anybody else. Maybe some people in Seattle, maybe Chris Peterson. If this was another coach at a major program, they may not have even let them out of their national letter of intent.
I think they probably would have, especially the mitigating circumstances here. This is more than just, oh, I've had a change of heart. I've changed my mind. Like, this is serious life stuff going on that he has to work through. And who knows if he's going to, it doesn't sound like he may even play football this year.
I mean, I agree with you. I'm just saying, Bama fans do not look at it that way.
I think that there are probably some fans who do. I don't think that they're a monolith. I don't think they're all the same.
Those people are not fans of Alabama.
Other than that, I'm not sure there are really a lot of takeaways from fall camp so far, other than that Jake Haner looks like he is winning the multi-Jake/Jacob competition to be the backup to Jake Browning so far.
We knew it would be a Jake. I just want to say about All I K Ho that, I mean, strange story. And also, you just hope that he gets to a place where.
Absolutely.
He's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other takeaways that you thought that you have gathered from, you know, fall practice?
Oh, tons of thoughts.
Okay, let's transition.
You know, there's really a lot of takeaways to be had from
them practicing and you not watching it.
College football practices.
Just reading about the accounts of it from beat writers and seeing some quotes.
Who would be the other competitors for the backup quarterback position?
Well, you've got the two incoming freshmen this year.
Yes.
So it doesn't sound like it's going to be either of them. Jacob Eason is not eligible to play this year.
Yes.
You know, we discussed the possibility that there would be a change to the transfer year rule. That did not come to pass. So he will sit out this year and prepare to potentially become the starter in 2019.
How many of the incoming freshmen are named Jake?
I think one.
Okay. Only one.
Yeah. Because Colson Yankoff is the other one. And that's not even close to Jake. Is it?
Colson Jankoff. It was a slow Jake recruiting offseason.
But Hayner has that extra year in the system, so I don't think terribly surprising that
it's obvious for him to be the
I don't know if
leader.
It's obvious. But, I mean, people wanted one of these freshmen to start as quarterback, remember?
I don't think people actually wanted that.
Oh, people definitely actually wanted that.
You were listening to some more questionable parts of the internet when you thought that people wanted somebody to start over Jake.
Yeah, well, you know who else was listening to it? Jake Browning, when he talked about it in an interview last
did he,
week.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Use it, Jake.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Jake Hayner, of course.
Should we just call Colson Yankoff Jake? Yeah. Should that be the running joke?
Yeah.
It's like the title of the position. It's like how people think that, like, you know, like when you're a kid, you think that Julius Caesar, like Caesar was part of his name as opposed to being like the title for, you know, the ruler in Rome. Uh-huh. So much the same way Jake is just the name of the UW quarterback,
yeah,
no
like
matter
it.
What their actual name is.
I like it.
Okay. Glad we're agreed on that one. Okay, speaking of teams who have not done anything but practice so far, but soon are going to do something else.
Middle child. We've been watching a lot of Clone High lately, naturally.
Oh, of course.
And somebody was asking what Gandhi's first name was, and Mrs. Fantasy Genius was explaining that Mahatma was a title. This is all way over me. It's yes. A Jake-type situation. But she was like, his name is Mohandas, and the middle child said Mohungus. Which I just really think is funny.
Okay.
Mohungus Gandhi. Anyway.
So the Seahawks will be playing a preseason game this Thursday against the Indianapolis Colts.
Ow!
Andrew Luck is going to throw a football by all accounts.
Really?
That's the story.
Wow.
I'll believe it when I see it, but that's the story. Seahawks news from training camp so far. Pete Carroll said on his interview on ESPN 710 Monday, or Tuesday rather, that Doug Baldwin should be back for the season opener with that knee injury, but it sounds like he's going to miss the entire preseason.
He's not going to be back.
He was very... Pete Carroll is very confident about it. You think he's just making this up because he wasn't very confident about Deion Jordan?
But, okay, what this means, if I can translate from Pete Carroll speak, do you remember when he said that Chris Carson was potentially coming back by the end of the year last year?
I mean, he was thinking that the Seahawks were going to go to the Super Bowl. So, you know, in that case, maybe he could have gotten back.
He meant during the regulars. Pete Carroll is a cockeyed optimist, and he is always overjudging when players are going to come back. Deion Jordan, him not being sure, means he's out for the year.
Oh, no.
Doug Baldwin being back by the season opener means he'll be back for week four.
Kind of a strange choice to not put on Deion Jordan on IR since they know he's out for the year.
Did they put Chris Carson on IR?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, he was eligible to return. They still had, I think, one of their injury return designations.
Okay. This is bad.
I mean, it's not good, but I think that Baldwin will most likely be in uniform for the season opener.
Can we make a bet on it? What type of bet can we make?
I don't know. What kind of bet can
we're betting. We don't have stakes.
All right, we'll figure
this out. Doug Baldwin will not... He might be suited... Doug Baldwin will not play snap in week one.
I should probably have to drink a sour beer. I don't know which.
Oh, I like that.
Punishment is here.
Let's just stick with that.
Well, you have to. We have to come up with something for you. The Seahawks brought back J.R. Sweezy, our old friend, former starter at right guard, who signed with Tampa Bay before the 2016 season and was waived by the Buccaneers in late June after missing his entire first season due to injuries and then playing 14 games last year.
Do other teams do this?
I don't know if they do it as much as the Seahawks. But, yeah. I mean, mean, I think they do. Like, the Seahawks obviously liked J.R. Sweezy. Tampa Bay just paid him a massive amount of money, which they almost immediately realized was a mistake.
But, I mean, it is a shocking amount of players that have left Seattle and then come back.
Yeah.
It's almost like... It's almost like fan service. It's not fan service because they traded Michael Bennett. So there's no fan service happening at all within this organization.
That
they're just very obsessed with their guys.
Look, they like what they like. Okay.
Tom Cable's gone. J.R. Sweezy's back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tom Cable will be back eventually also. We're betting on that too.
Okay. I'll take that. Sweezy will potentially battle DJ Fluker for the starting job at right guard, which is interesting because it's a contrast in terms of styles. Sweezy being the smaller, more technical pass blocking specialist. Fluker, even though I think he graded better, I think if I recall Ben B's tweets correctly, he rated better in terms of run blocking by Pro Football Focus last year. But DJ Fluker, the more massive, more immobile run blocking specialist.
If there's one thing to say about the Seahawks offensive line going into 2018 versus 2017, it's that they have a lot of players now.
I suppose that's true. They have players. They probably had players.
They have a lot. They have a lot of players with NFL playing experience.
Okay, so heading into you attending the preseason game on Thursday.
I'm actually not going to that game.
Oh, you're not?
Yeah, I'm going to week four.
Okay. Heading into you... into you attending that game in week four, the most important news of the past week, the Seahawks expanding their food offerings at CenturyLink Field in part of their continued commitment to serving quality food at a football stadium. They're adding salumi sandwiches and then also expanding Din Tai Fung's presence from one stand there to three stands.
I didn't even know there was one stand. So they're in both Safeco Field and CenturyLink Field.
That appears to check out.
I mean, this is... we're lucky to be living in the year 2018.
I mean, do you remember how bad food was in the kingdom, your beloved kingdom?
This is stadium food now.
The answer is no, because we never were allowed to eat there.
And we didn't want to, though. I don't remember...
No, I mean, I wasn't upset about it, but we weren't allowed to. Yes.
It's pretty amazing what's happening here.
Yeah. Not everything is terrible. That's my takeaway from this.
I mean, the football's going to be bad, but... we'll be able to eat salumi sandwiches or Din Tai Fung or Great State Burgers.
You can also have, in terms of like the non-restaurant offerings, like the Seahawks Fuel First and Goal specific offerings, they're now adding pho and then a pork belly banh mi.
I don't know if I want pho at a football game.
It seems like a very strange choice. Like you're just sitting there during the play, slurping on some pho.
That is... where? What?
I don't know which stands it's at off the top of my head.
I bet that's at like one place, but it's like a news story.
Yeah, I mean, they seem pretty into it, though.
I don't know if I will see a single person all year eating a bowl of pho at the ball
You
game.
Have to report back if you do. We definitely have to come back.
I feel like it took them the entire first quarter. There were slurps all over the place.
I mean, I recall declaring that chicken and waffle was not a good thing to eat at a sporting event.
Yeah, we've blown past
it's
chicken
way
and waffles.
Past that, yeah. Compared to that, chicken and waffle looks like pizza cake.
Oh my God. Wow. Okay.
I of course, am waiting until they get cow soy or ramen on the menu.
We need so many choices that everybody can have like their own specific foods.
Your own favorite Asian soup. Battles to watch, I think, in the preseason and in this game in particular. The entire running back depth chart seems to be in flux. Mm-hmm. The great Chris Carson, Rashad Penny debate of 2018 that has divided, apparently, fantasy football Twitter.
Oh, has it?
Yeah.
Man, the Seahawks are good at that.
They are. I mean, the answer is neither.
Yeah.
The answer is don't have any Seahawks running back. What about last season would convince you that you want to have a Seahawks running back on your fantasy football roster? Nothing.
You're going to get a high volume of carries out of one of those.
But you're not, because they're going to split time. And CJ Procise, if healthy, or JD McKissick, if not, those guys are going to be in the mix. It's just stay away. It's a stay away.
You're trying to scare people off.
No, I'm not.
You announce the Fantasy Football League on this podcast, and then you tell people to stay away from players.
Yeah, you see me draft.
You know draft CJ Procise is going to be a great PPR running back.
I only drafted Carson in one league last year.
I had probably every Seahawks running back at various times.
Probably true. The wide receivers after the top two who are actually going to play in this game, since Baldwin, of course, will not.
Who are we considering the top two?
Well, Tyler Lockett.
Mm-hmm. And Brandon Marshall?
No, I don't consider him there.
Okay.
I would consider Brown the other one of the top two.
Really? Jerron Brown?
Yeah. I think he's the most established. I mean, Marshall is slowly being worked in. It'll be interesting to see what we see from him. I mean, there's just so many guys who are in the mix after those top two. I mean, Amara Darbo, probably just with his experience, is somewhat ahead, I think, in the preseason.
Amara Darbo with his experience?
Like, he's been in the system for a year.
Wow, that is a sentence that you just uttered.
He's caught passes in regular season games from Russell Wilson.
Or has he caught pass?
I think he's caught multiple. I guess by this logic that
oh my God,
Tanner McAvoy should also be ahead of everyone else.
Seriously.
And I did not necessarily go that far. How many passes did Amara Darbo catch last season? He caught
8. Oh, well.
Yeah.
All right. This is a wide receiver who, among the Seahawks wide receiver core, is considered experienced.
I just meant in the system. I mean, Brandon Marshall is one of the most experienced players in the NFL. Obviously, he's more experienced than Amara Darbo, but he's barely practiced this year as they're like easing him into things. So he does not have the same kind of chemistry with Russell Wilson that Darbo has.
Tell me more about Salumi.
Oh, we broke you. The safety opposite Bradley McDougald, I think, is going to be interesting to watch. You know, you've got Tedrick Thompson, Delano Hill in that mix, along with the veterans. So, plenty of options there in an important position in the Seahawks secondary. And then I think the other competitions to watch, the special teams competitions. Mm. How many teams have open, active competitions at both punter and kicker, like the Seahawks do?
I mean, the Seahawks pretty much have competition at every single position across the board, except for maybe like 5.
I mean, definitely not quarterback.
Quarterback?
The two primary linebacker spots, no competition there.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
I mean, assuming Baldwin is healthy, like number one wide receiver.
Shaquille Griffin, no competition there.
And that.
Yeah. And McDougal definitely seems sure to start in spot at one of the positions. It'd be really stunning if he didn't start.
So, I mean, it's hard to kind of target.
The offensive line, there doesn't seem to be a ton of competition. We'll see. You know, it'll be interesting to see. I don't know if George Fant's going to play at all, but if he does, it'll probably be at left tackle.
Left tackle? I heard there's talk that he's playing right tackle.
I mean, they've mostly been working him back, it seems like, at left tackle, with an eye towards eventually playing him at right tackle. That would, if he plays right tackle, then there's potentially some competition. The other, you know, the three offensive line spots on the left side of the line seem pretty well settled.
But this is the year that we go into, probably more so than any season since Pete and John's first season at the helm, that there'll be, maybe the second year, I guess, that there's this much competition going into camp.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of things will look different in 2 days because people tend to put too much emphasis on the preseason since it's what we actually can see as fans.
Mm-hmm. Kason Williams is going to be huge.
There will be new heroes that emerge, new fan favorites, new people for us to get disappointed about when they get cut, and then they probably won't make any difference the rest of their career.
But, I mean, we could be going into this game. I would say that my money right now would be on Michael Dixon winning the starting job at punter.
Yeah. I mean, there was a good analysis of that on the Tasteful Profanity this week, and Ben B made the point that, you know, if those two guys are even similar, Dixon's contract is so much better than John Ryan's that you just have to keep it. It does seem like there's a little bit more commitment to Sebastian Janikowski at kicker than Jason Myers, but, you know, Myers is still on the roster for a reason.
And they're both new kickers. I mean, anything could happen with that competition.
And it's not exactly like Janikowski's a sure thing at this stage of his career, coming off a season missed due to injury.
But so if you consider positions that are kind of up in the air, those are the things that we're going to have to watch. I mean, you mentioned playing time at wide receiver, how the tight end depth chart is kind of settled, defensive line, what that looks like, how much Shaquem Griffin, how much playing time he gets, and how he looks. I think we're all pretty excited just to see. Maybe Byron Maxwell is going to be out for this game, or at least in mispractice for a while. So seeing how Trey Flowers fares on the opposite cornerback position.
Yep.
There's a lot that's up in the air going into this game.
For sure.
The preseason is going to matter more this year than it's mattered in a long time.
Yeah, that's probably true. Any other thoughts going into this one? Are you?
I guess I'm looking forward to watching football again.
Okay.
I mean, it feels like it's been forever.
But yet you said that you were surprised that it was here.
It sneaks up on you.
I mean, it feels like the appropriate time for me. Seafair's over. You know, your obsessive focus on unlimited hydroplane racing is in the rearview mirror.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It seems like the right time for it.
And then also just trying to stay healthy. I mean,
yeah.
I don't want to say that George Fant's injury derailed the entire 2017 season, but it definitely didn't help.
It derailed not trading a third round pick for or a second round pick and a third round pick for Dwayne Brown.
I mean, it's just so important to stay healthy.
Yeah. Which is why you generally hate the preseason.
I hate the preseason more than anything.
Yeah. I don't mind it. I like that there's nothing at stake.
You love when players get injured. Why would you? Who loves the preseason?
Oh, I like when there's nothing at stake.
I don't know. The preseason.
Stakes are annoying.
The preseason's kind of fun. You see all sorts of crazy boys. Like players who likely will not be on the team during the regular season getting playing time.
Yeah.
Who is the backup quarterback as of right now?
Austin Davis.
Okay.
It sounds like Alex Magoo has not been playing particularly well. I think that's his name. I'm pretty sure that's his name.
I'm ready for some Alex Magoo action, though.
The results have been, the reviews, rather, from training camp have been not particularly positive about him. I don't think he's mounting much of a challenge for the backup job at this point.
Just wait till Thursday.
Okay. The beginning of the Alex Magoo legend. You're calling it now, trade Russ, start Magoo.
That's another bet that we're making.
Are we?
No. Oh, my God.
Give me whatever odds you want on that one.
No, it'll be fun to come back next week and actually be talking about a football game, though.
Right. I mean, we'll have a lot more observations and analysis coming out of that than we possibly can going into it. Well, on that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.